site that I came across this year regarding Rus. In particular, why do we read Rus on Shavuos? Why do I read Rus on Shavuos? It's a very nice story. It's pleasant. It goes down well, as you'd say. Doesn't have many psukim. Some of those that in Eretz Yisrael, they read Rus on the first day, because the first day and the second day are all the same day in Eretz Yisrael. It's all one big day. So if you're to be laning Shir Hashirim or Kehelas, it's got many parakim. So it's more difficult if you stayed up a whole night to read Rus. So to read a Shir Hashirim or to read Kehelas. So this is a smaller Megillah. And it's a nice Megillah, but Chazal tell us that there's much more significance inside Rus than perhaps meets the eye. Now, some of the reasons are not earth-shattering reasons, and even the reason that we're going to discuss, just the insight that hopefully we'll take from it, might be an eye-opener. But the reasons which the Medrash and the Masechet Seferim state, some of us are probably familiar with. Number one, the story of Rus took place during the Zman HaKotzir. It was during the harvest season. And Shavuos is during the harvest season. So we laid Rus. I wasn't so earth-shattering. Okay. We laid Rus during the Zman HaKotzir, and that's when the story of Rus took place. There is another reason brought down that we know that one of the 48 ways that the Torah is that the Torah is acquired is through Mesiras Nefesh, through self-sacrifice. And if one goes through the story of Rus, we find a tremendous amount of Mesiras Nefesh, of Rus's part, Kiel Shatel Chiyelech, Shatolini Olin, Amich Ami, Elakayach Elakai. She makes a declaration that whatever you do, Naomi, that's what I'm going to do at all costs. And eventually this princess from Moab finds herself as a, mind the expression, as a mesholach, as a beggar, inside the fields of a strange man, Boaz. It's total self-sacrifice under the guidance of Naomi. So that's why we laid Rus. Others say the reason is because at the end of the Megillah, it discusses the birth of Oved, who was the grandfather of David HaMelech, the father of Yishai, who was the father of David. And David was born on Shavuos. So to commemorate and remind ourselves of the birth of David, who also died 70 years later as well, on Shavuos. But to remind us of that, so therefore we lay in Rus. Alright? I mean, again, if it's just to remind us of the birth of David, I think we could have chosen a few chapters inside Tehillim that David HaMelech wrote, and we would go through different parts of Shmuel where it discusses David HaMelech becoming the Melech. But that's another reason brought down. Others say that Rus was a Gioris, was a convert. And the Jewish people as a nation became converts on Shavuos. In fact, the Maral discusses what exactly was our relationship with our brothers and sisters and mothers and fathers. The halacha is that a ger shen is gaya kikot nesharei ledami, a ger that converts is permissible. I'm not saying that that's who we should, but that's who we could marry. He can marry his own sister. So by the Jews, by Kabbalah Satorah, technically we would have been permitted to marry our own brothers and sisters. Now, of course, that was prohibited. The Torah tells us that. But there was a status of gerus that took place. We converted. So to go over and review and to appreciate the life of a convert, which we all were by Kabbalah Satorah Shavuos, so we read a story of a convert. Alright. We have a story in the Torah of a convert. His name is Yisro. It's interesting that the letters of Rus and the letters of Yisro Both of them have inside of it the two key letters for the word Torah, Tef and a Resh inside of it with the Vav. Right? But both of them are stories of people which committed themselves to the Torah. Shavuos is the day of Kabbalah Satorah. So these are all reasons found inside the Medrash of why we lay Megillas Rus on Shavuos. But I would like to take two different avenues of approaches which Chazal do tell us. The Medrash tells us, Inyan Rus Liatzeris. What is the connection between Rus and Atzeres is another name for Shavuos. Sha'atayra le'nitna ela ayyidei Yisurim. The Torah was given to us only through and under the conditions of Yisurim. Yisurim means suffering. I'll explain exactly what that means. But there's a certain, again, as we mentioned before, Mesiras Nefesh, but more than Mesiras Nefesh, there are times that Jews have died and sacrificed tremendously because they were Jews. Yisurin, there's pain, there's struggle, there's difficulties. And that's how one acquires Torah. The Gemara tells us that Talmidei Chachamim are menaded shena, they distant and shake off sleep from their eyes. They're tired, but they keep late hours because they're studying, they're toiling inside Torah, further and further inside the study of Torah. That's a part of what Yisurim is. It doesn't come easy. It doesn't come that, you know, I'm sitting back with a pipe and a chumash and a lazy boy. That's not the way it goes. There's Yisurim. There's difficulties. There's struggles. But we're going to see it's much more than that. And then the Medrash makes a comparison to another book. Now, inside Rus is a book as well of struggles. You find that story opens up. Vayhi Rav Ba'aretz. There was a hunger, there was a drought, and there was a certain individual who happened to be one of the leaders of the Jewish people, Elimelech, and he leaves. And he goes to live in a distant land. That's not easy. Even though he did it for various personal reasons, but it's still difficult to move. You gotta call the U-Haul, and you gotta call the movers, you gotta make sure they don't break the china, you gotta carry out the tables, you have to have your sale on the garage sale. It's a big deal to move. He was a wealthy man. And then afterwards you have, he moves to Moab, goes to Jordan, which I'm sure was not like it is today. It wasn't from the friendlier countries to Eretz Yisrael. And he settles over there. And not long afterwards, his children come home with a wonderful Achamad, a wonderful Arab girl. I'm sure that wasn't such nachas to him. And two of them, two Moabites, get married to his sons, Machlon and Chilion. Not long after that, the stock market crashes. And he starts losing his money. That's a little depressing. I mean, quite depressing. Not long after that, his children die, one after the other. And eventually he dies. It's a depressing story. A man loses his wealth, he loses his family, and then Naomi is left there with two daughter-in-laws, a poor woman, a widow, and then one decides to go back on her ways, and the other one, they have a debate, they gotta come back, they gotta be begging. It's not a happy story, at least in the beginning. So where else do we find such a similar story? You know where else we have a similar story? The story with Eve. The Medrash makes the comparison. It's also a depressing story. Starts off wonderful. Eve is a wealthy man. He has seven children. He has many fields. And then gradually he starts to lose it all. Why? We're not going to go into right now and how that worked. He loses it all. Something came there to test him. But the Medrash says, Rus has a happy ending. Doesn't say that with Eve. Does say it with Rus. Says that there's a happy ending, at least at the end, from that whole story. It came out eventually, Rus got married to Boaz. And from the Boaz came out eventually David HaMelech. Even though, if you look in the Pasuk regarding Eov, it does have a happy ending. Eov does have a happy ending. The Pasuk tells us that all his wealth came back to him, more than what he had originally when he lost it all. But the Medrash doesn't say that. The Pasuk says it in Eov. But the Medrash doesn't say that the ending, everything turned out to be beautiful. I saw in a sefer, the Nachlas Yosef, which parts of what we're saying right now comes from, says there's a big difference between Eov and Rus. Eov suffered, and then after his suffering, it happened that things started happening. Hashem directed it that way, that eventually his wealth came back to him, and things started to look very, very fine for Eov again. Rus, the suffering that Rus suffered was a, so to say, breaking the ground and a direct cause to the eventual result of the birth of David HaMelech. The two of them are interconnected. In order for a David HaMelech to become a David HaMelech, the soil had to be broken in through a personality like Rus, which eventually would be able to bear a child by the name of David HaMelech. If you look throughout Tehillim, you find many a times David HaMelech talks of states of depression and oppression, and he says a mizmor. He says a praise, he says a song. Things look like they're just going great. And David HaMelech is running away in the mountains, in the Judean mountains, the Hara Yehuda. He's being chased by his son Avshalom, and he's saying a mizmor. He's singing a song. It's something beautiful. If you wouldn't know the background of some of the kapitloch, some of the chapters of Tehillim, you think David HaMelech, wow, he had this bliss, he had this olam hazeh, he had the greatest of lives. And then you learn Shmuel Beis and you start seeing he didn't have such a great life. And then if you learn the Tehillim inside, you see exactly what David HaMelech, the state that he was in. And he's still saying mizmor. It's unbelievable. How did he come to that? Well, the way that came into David HaMelech's, into his genes, was through Rus. Rus was able to go through states of suffering. And in spite of what she went through with a certain faith in Naomi and in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that was passed on. That eventually, when David was born, he was able to handle that. There are some people, when tragedy strikes, they fall apart. They don't know where to start, they don't know where they're going, they don't know what's going on. There are other people that, when tragedy strikes, they're able to deal with the punches. Somehow or another, they can walk around with smiles. Somehow or another, they're able to talk to other people and converse on things which are related to the tragedy or non-related to the tragedy, and you can't even see anything, there's nothing ever hit them. But it's not a show, it's real. But it takes a lot of training put yourself in such a state. That's what Chazal are telling us. Chazal are telling us Rus and Eiv. But Rus has a happy ending. What does it mean it has a happy ending? What Chazal are telling us about a happy ending is that Rus was it was necessary for Rus to go through what she did, because that was planting the seeds for eventually making a happy ending. The result came about only through the preparation, which was through Rus. There's a Medrash. The Medrash says, Rabbi Yechinon ben Zakkai says the following, Lama Nikra Shemai Rus. Why was her name Rus? We find this very often in Chazal. I'm not sure it's Rabbi Yechinon ben Zakkai, just Rabbi Yechinon. The Medrash says, why was she called Rus? Well, we don't find out why someone called Stephen, why someone called Harry, why is someone called, you know, Susan, or that, I'm sorry, that's your name, right? Right. Why is someone called? But Chazal, when it comes to Hebrew names, we spoke about this many times, that the name of the person is the essence of the person. So Chazal want to find out, who is this Rus? She's called Rus. Who's Rus? So Rabbi Yochanan answers, Sheyatza mimenu David, because she had a descendant by the name of David, Sherova Bashir, that he was overflowing. Rus, Rava, the same Sharush, was overflowing with praise and song to Hashem. So this medrash, it's a little difficult to understand. Yachin's telling us a brainstorm. He's telling us that, you know who the grandmother of David was? Rus. I mean, that's why you need the medrash. Medrash is telling us, the reason why Rus is called Rus, because she had a grandson by the name of David. We'll open up the end of Rus, you know, about Pasuk, about Ayin Ches, or Ayin Tes, right, where it starts going through the births, going from parents from Yehuda, and eventually you'll see in the last Pasuk it says that Yishai had a son, and the son's name was David. So I know Rus was a grandmother, a great-grandmother of David. Bechus to tell us, why was Rus called Rus? Because she had a grandson by the name of David. That's not what the Medrash is telling us. The Medrash is telling us Rus and David are interconnected. Rus, that it was eventually a birth of David, that it was a person that would be able to sing song in spite of all of the suffering that he might go through in his life. That was because there was a grandmother by the name of Rus who trained the family. And I was thinking that could be why the child's Boaz and Rus's child's name was Oved. What does Oved mean? It means to work. It means to toil. It means to sweat. It means to put inside an effort which eventually gives forth. Yishai, Yesh means something which has an existence to it. Something which is a Yesh Ma'ayin. Because once there's toil, once there's work, once one knows how to deal with the outside difficulties, then eventually it could come to someone by the name of David. That's what Rabbi Yochanan is telling us. Rabbi Yochanan is telling us, Rus, she was called Rus, meaning her essence was Rus. And from that eventually came out someone by the name of David, Sherava Bashir, he was able to sing out songs. We once mentioned this. David HaMelech says on himself, Ani Avdecha Ben Amasecha. That's what David calls himself. Ani Avdecha Ben Amasecha. I'm your servant, Hashem, but Ben Amasecha, the son, the grandson of Amasecha, of your maidservant, of his grandmother, he gives credit to. Even though, of course, his father was one of the greatest tzaddikim that ever lived. He died without any sin, Yishai. He was a great man. But the credit that David said, how he was able to see how his life went on, that he was able to deal with bitachon and his commitment, that was Ben HaMasecha. That was because he recognized who Rus was. Shlomo HaMelech had a throne next to his throne. We discussed this when we learned way back when in Malachim. He had a special throne for Rus, according to one Pirish, that was the second throne for his great-great-grandmother, Rus. That was the personalities and the soil that David and Shlomo were exposed to that created who they were. There's a muscle that in the Sefer he says, you have, like today, we had such weather like that. Sometimes you have a very cloudy day and everything seems very dark. Then the wind comes and blows everything away and it's sunny again. Sometimes you have dark clouds that come and it pours rain. And after all the rain, there's sunshine. What's the difference between the two? The difference between the two is when you have the sun, it's cloudy, and then afterwards the sun comes out. That's seemingly, I'm sure, scientifically there are connections, but the clouds, and then the sunshine at the end. The two of them are not connected one with the other. It was cloudy, so it was a little dark. And then afterwards, the sun came out. That's Eve. Eve starts off with his suffering, his hardships, say there's death, there's illness. And then afterwards, the sun came out. Sometimes the clouds and the storm that comes all works in harmony, which eventually brings about the beauty and appreciation and the greatness of the sun. Because we know when it rains, if you have seeds which are planted inside the ground, they start to germinate, they start to grow, and suddenly you have a different life. And when the sun comes out, it gives its rays, it gives what's called photosynthesis, right, into the plants, and things start to grow. So the storm and the clouds were working together with the eventual beauty of the sunshine. And that was Rus. Rus, there were clouds. It was a storm. But that was all eventually to bring about the soften and break in the ground that would lead to a David HaMelech. The Torah is the same way. The Torah, the Gemara tells us that Torah is acquired through Yisurim. It's a very interesting Chazal. Chazal tell us Torah was given on Har Sinai. Phonetically, if that's the way you say it, Sinai, which we find that Chazal do use that approach in Drushas as well, is how words sound. Sinai, the Gemara says, Kimen shanasa an Torah li Yisrael, nasa sina l'umay sayma. Unbelievable. When the Jews got the Torah, anti-Semitism was given to the world. All of a sudden, people, nations of the world started to hate us. Does it have to do with a Zionistic state? No. Does it have to do with because we have long noses? No. Does it have to do with because some Jews are very wealthy and influential? No. Chazal does. It started way back when. The beginning of our time. Kivan Shanasa and Torah Li Yisrael. Torah was given. Now it could spark up through various ways. But if you want to know the seed, you know when it started? It was when the Torah was given to the Jewish people. Now we know what happened right afterwards. Came along Amalek. Came along other nations, and Ammons, and Moabs, and Esavs. We go into Eretz Yisrael, we got seven kings, seven nations there, and that the hours there continues. Why the hostility? Why, as soon as we receive the Torah, Chazal tell us, and Hashem, you couldn't make it that, you know, everybody should love us. We should have to walk in the street and say, oh, it's a Jew, how wonderful to see you. It's not the reality. There are many, many pictures and cartoons how Jews are depicted and described. What's mentioned from a palm in the dictionary. Now we talk about, we hear on the radio today, the N-word, Tanish Zagin, now let us say the N-word. But you don't need the J-word too, but the J-word you'll find inside the dictionary, and it's used. It's called to Jew somebody. You know what that means? That means to cheat. Look it up, it's inside Webster. Right? So that's allowed. You're allowed to say to Jew someone. To Jew someone means that you're cheating him. Because the way the outside world, the language, when they wanted to call someone a cheater, so they identified with a Jew. Chmona Litzlah. The Palm said that's one of the things that we have to accomplish. We have to get that word out of the dictionary, not because we cross it out, but because we, through our behavior, you know, we are so distant from that word that nobody should even think of using that word when they talk about a Jew. Why is that so? Why does Hashem make, as soon as we get that Torah, tis the sin? So the truth really is, it doesn't have to be like that. It has to be like that if we make it like that. What do I mean? Hashem put the sin into this world to protect us. To protect us. How does that protect us? If they hate us, it protects us. Well, in a certain way, it protects us. The way that it protects us is we have a certain mission while we're here. We are Am Navadot. We are Am Anivcha. We are an Am Segula. How we got to be chosen, that's not for tonight's class. But we are a chosen nation. We are a treasure. We are a special nation. We have a special mission here. And Hashem doesn't want us to forget that mission. He doesn't want us to forget it. And you know what? He'll go to the utmost to make sure that we don't forget that mission. If we think that we will be able to be and act and conduct ourselves like all Goyim, Hashem says, I will put an end to it. I won't allow that to happen. That's not what you're here for. You can't change it. That's not what our mission is. The Gra says every single gullus has its own individual Yetzer Hara. Every gullus has its own Yetzer Hara. What is the Yetzer Hara of our gullus? When the Gra only lived in the 1700s, that's in the 1730s, 1740s, right? That's a long ago, right? So the Gra says, what we're living in right now? What's the Yetzer Hara? So he says, you know what the Yetzer Hara is? We want to be like the Goyim. We want to be like them. He's talking about the 1700s, when Jews still were living in ghettos. Let's think about it a little bit today. I don't know if there are more Jewish Chinese restaurants than there are Chinese restaurants. I don't know, I've never done really a survey. But it's unbelievable. Chinese restaurants. Remember last year, 2 years ago, a year or two, I don't remember what, my in-laws took us out. We went to a Japanese restaurant. Now, not that I personally had any interest going to Japanese restaurants. I didn't even know there's a Japanese, Chinese, but this is where they fed. It was a real fancy restaurant. And then you ordered all these foods, and I just stuck to regular American food, so that's what I would eat. You could get this, you could get that. I can't even pronounce them after what they are. And then you ask the waiter what it is. That's Jim. You don't even know what it is. You know, you can't even get clear what it is. So they have in English underneath what it is. You get Japanese food. Everything that we do, there's so much that we do today, which we want to copy the Goyim. They have glatt kosher cuisines. We have what are they called? Way of shrimp, and you have gelatin today that's kosher. Everything, lard. I mean, it's kosher. Chal Yisrael. I don't know if it's Chal Yisrael, but whatever you want, you can have it. It's kosher. It's only here.
In America.
Israel. I know when I was in Eretz Yisrael, any new product that came out within, they had to have it. Okay, that's for sure. The KFC, and you got McDonald's, and you got Nathan's, and you got Pizza Hut. What?
Sparrows.
Okay. You got them all. Right? You have, I just saw the Jewish Week, which I'm not a big reader in, but I happen to see it for a different reason, a tour of Egypt and Israel. And they'll take you to all the places in Egypt. I don't know why we got to go to Egypt. I don't exactly know why we have to support the tourists of Egypt, but that's what we have. You have cruises that go to all over the world, kosher, black kosher, so what else do I advertise? To Bermuda. We were running to the Philippines. That's where we gotta go. Terrence goes, that's what everybody does. So they have a glatt kosher. They used to, I don't know, maybe close down. They had a glatt kosher hotel in Las Vegas and Atlantic City. Why not? What do we need that? Terrence says, of course you have other ones, right? Donald Trump has his. So Chaim Goldstein has that his too. And we got a Niyika Cholagayim. Clothing that we have to have, the dress what we have to have, TV shows, talk shows, radio shows, whatever they have to have. We got to keep up with them. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, it's not going to get that close that you're going to forget who you are. There's going to be the KKK. There's going to be the KKK. And there's going to be the Nazi Party. There's going to be the Communist Party. And there's going to be those that are going to remind us that we're in Galus. We might not like it. We might not want it. But that's what they're there for. They're there to tell us Torah is nitna b'yisurim. We once discussed this. I've yidden machnish ken kiddush, the eibish tadaf machin havdala. If Jews don't want to sanctify themselves and make them separated through kedusha, through holiness, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm going to have to remind you to wear the Star of David. I'm going to have to remind you that the goyim will have to make avdala. Don't make avdala. You're not making kiddush. You want to be just like them? Someone's going to come and make avdala. That's the yisurim. That's the suffering. That's the struggle that sometimes we have within our nation, within our history. So Rus was a person who lived on an individual level through a state of Yisurim, but the end result was David HaMelech came out from that. The end result will be from this sinner, from this separation, is going to be also a David. He's going to be a Melech HaMashiach. As Mordechai Ben David sings on his tapes, you got to hold on just a little bit longer. We hold on. We will see at the end result will be all the suffering and all the Yisurim and all the struggles that we had. Just as what happened to Rus, the end result was. When David HaMelech came out, the end result will be a Mashiach will come out as well. So that's another idea of why we lay in Rus on Shavuos. But I want to give another idea. And I, of course, the Medrash says. The Medrash gives us another idea. So we've covered a major part, but the next part really is the main part, and I hope we can get it as much as we could get in. The Medrash says like this. If you study the Megillah, Megillah Metchila Atzayf, from the beginning to the end, has inside of it acts of chesed, acts of kindness. And the Maharaj, the Medrash says, the Torah also, mitchila va'atzayif, from the beginning to its end, has acts of chesed. The Torah starts off with chesed. What is the chesed? The Medrash says the Torah starts with, well, it starts off with the zivug, the shidduch of Adam and Chava. And in that wonderful shidduch, who is the tailor? Where did Chava and Adam buy their suits at Sims? Where did they go? They went to Lomans. Where did they pick up their outfits? Which bridal store? So it says, Hashem made for them clothing. Kostnasar, she wore leather. A leather suit at the wedding. I don't know, try it today with one of the girls, try to wear on a leather suit at the wedding. Sometimes it wouldn't go over well, right? It wouldn't go over well. Or maybe because nobody was around then, so then she could get away with it, right? But that's the Pasuk says. Well, was that in style, right? Today's also in style, but maybe not in our styles, right? So, they had a leather jacket, you know, like for the motorcycle groups. Maybe that's why they wear it, the mamash makbid on the first garment, they're going back to the beginning of time. So it says that Hashem made for them clothing. Moreover, the Gemara says that Hashem braided Chava's hair. Can you imagine that? He became a hairstylist. Whatever that means, that's a whole shiur by itself. Hashem braided Chava's hair. Made a nice shape or whatever she was wearing, I don't know. Made it beautiful. She had maybe braids. She went to Meisharim, she went to Lancaster, long braids, I don't know, whatever. Hashem was involved with beautifying Chava. It's unbelievable. I mean, that's what Hashem was busy with. Nothing else to do. That was chesed. The Medrash says, what does the Torah end with? It also ends with chesed. The end of the Torah deals with the death of Moshe Rabbeinu. Hashem was metapel, he was involved with the death and the removal of Moshe Rabbeinu from this world and his burial. And then in between, we got a whole bunch of stories. From Adam to Noach, everything's it's filled with chesed. So too says the Medrash. Rus is the same thing. It's maschel b'chesed. It starts off with chesed. How Rus is involved with taking care of her mother-in-law. Or also the removal of chesed. Elimelech turning his eyes on his people at the time of need, and we see what happens to him and to his family. And it ends with Chesed, how Boaz takes care of and feeds Ruth, marries her, and eventually we have the birth of David HaMelech. What is Chesed? Hear the words Chesed. What is Chesed? There's another word. The Rambam Amar Nevuchim defines the difference between Tzedek, Tzedakah, and Chesed. Tzedek and Tzedakah, there's a fine line difference. Chesed is a major difference between the two. If I borrow from someone $100, and I return to that person the $100, that's Tzedek. I'm dealing righteously. I borrowed from you. Mishpat, law, tells me I should return it to you. It's that the Rambam calls Tzedek. You do a favor for me, so I do a favor for you in return. That's very nice. Then there's Chesed. Chesed is, where the Rambam defines it, is I do things for you even though there's no reason for me to do it. I might not even know who you are, and I still do chesed for you. Not only do I do chesed for you and I don't know who you are, I could perhaps not even expect anything in return. That's chesed. It's not mishpat. I don't have to do it. You might not even know who I am and never know who I am. That's chesed. As it goes ahead, the needs blood. Tonight's blood. Not because he belongs to a blood bank, this way he gets in return. That might be labeled tzedek. But someone that needs blood, and nobody knows who's receiving it, and you're just giving it because you know somebody down the road will benefit from your blood. That's chesed. That's how the Rambam defines what chesed is. Oh, there are people that go to visit hospitals, nursing homes. They sit with people they never saw before, and they probably won't see again. But they do it for one reason, for chesed. We do it because there is such a thing that's called inside of us, a tselem elikim, an image, a little touching, a little connection to elikim. Elikim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when he created the world, Olam Chesed Yibaneh. The Ramchal explains, why did Hashem make the world? Well, he had nothing else what to do, so one day he says, ding, I'm going to make a world. I'm going to make a beautiful ocean. I'm going to make millions of fish, billions of stars. Well, he had nothing better to do. And probably he did it in 6 days, so he's probably bored afterwards. Why did he do that? So the Ramchal explains, he was exercising a certain midah within the personality of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is called chesed. He did it not because he's going to receive anything in return, and not even because people will recognize him. I always say it's one of the biggest disgraces. You walk into many of these science museums and they forget to mention the Creator. Sit by an IMAX and they'll show you everything about space. And they'll tell you all the people that donated money to make the film. But they forgot to say who made the space. Who made the stars. Who gives the ability for the rocket ship to go up and for people to float without gravity. Who's doing that? Photographer? Who's doing that? So they forget to mention God. A little detail. Fine little detail. They forgot to mention the one who donated $1 million that gets sued and they have to close up shop. They flank God. Hashem doesn't make an issue. You have a plant. The other day there was a little ladybug walking across the desk. One of the boys wanted to smash. I said, "Oh, touch, it's beautiful. It's a Rebbe, Rebbe. It's such beautiful. You want to get rid of it, so you take a book and you shoot aside, but don't crush the thing. What are you crushing it for? Rebbe, it's so much fun." Different people get different fun out of different things. But there's an appreciation of a bug. There's beauties in insects, some of them. I'm not saying anyone should, I'm not encouraging cockroaches, things like that. But there's a beauty in a cockroach too, which I'm not going to discuss. I don't want to give any iron types, iron hearts. But everything within the world is beauty. Hashem did it not for the sake of receiving anything in return. He did it because, as we would say in Yiddish, as a gutta. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a good being, he's a good God. So we, who are following in his ways, we who are the Tzelem Elikim, have within ourselves this yanika, this yearning, and the ability to shower chesed upon others. But there are many reasons why people do chesed. People do chesed because it gets them popular. There are some people that do chesed because they can't wait to get the plaque. They get a big plaque that they do a lot of chesed. Some people do chesed because it makes them feel important. That's not true chesed. That's what the Rambam would refer to really as tzedakah. You're doing for others, but you want to receive in return. You want to receive. It's a certain level of doing kindness. But that's not the real chesed. The real definition of chesed is a person who does only for the sake of doing. Is doing for the sake of, I want to be mative to another. I want to do good to another. Why? Because I want to do good to another. That's why. This world constantly needs chesed to be done. Oh, there's a pasuk. The pasuk says, Chastei Hashem la'olam ashira. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's throne, the Kisei HaKavod, remains firm and remains strong by acts of chesed. You know, for example, if you have a chair that's breaking, so it needs glue to hold the pieces together, else the Kisei falls apart. What's the glue that keeps Kaviyachol, the Kisei HaKavod, together? That's chesed. Kadosh Baruch Hu studies and looks into the world and sees, what chesed are we doing? How much of it are we doing? Well, the Mishnah tells us, Ashleisha Dvar Ma'alam Aymed, Ala Torah V'Ala Vaydev Al Gemilas Chesedim. There are three things that keeps the world standing, keeps it going. The last one is Gemle Chesedim. Those that do acts of kindness. And if you don't keep on going, it stalls, like a bicycle. If you get on a bicycle, so you keep on pedaling. Today we're so used to cars, they put on the cruise control, say, hey, it goes, right? But there used to be such a thing called a bicycle, right? So you get on a bicycle, and you pedal. As long as you're pedaling, it's going to go. But in your case, sometimes you go down the hill, so you don't have to pedal. But if you want to get up the hill, you're going to have to pedal. That's chesed. Chesed is something which is ongoing. The olam is aymed ala chesed. That means the world needs, constantly fed into it, the energy, the forces of chesed, which are done by people. That's what the Torah is. And that's what the Medrash is telling us regarding Rus. The entire Rus teaches us various acts of chesed. I want to tell you something. More than that. Because if you were to open up the book of Rus, it doesn't have the chesed of Avraham Avinu inside it. Avraham Avinu, we know in the beginning, Pashas Vayera, the Torah tells us he was an old man, he's 100 years old, and he just had an operation, he barely could walk. Hashem brings out a sun that it's boiling outside. No air conditioning. Old man, he's sick. the three people are wandering out in the desert. Who are those three people? They weren't rabbis. They weren't Bill Gates' friends. They weren't sports heroes. Arabs. People that you wouldn't sit next to on a train. What does Avraham Avinu do? He by Yoritz Avraham, he runs out and he says, oh, I couldn't wait for you, I'll wait for you the whole day. He brings him into his house. And he goes out and he takes out the, he tells Ishmael, we're going to shech for making a feast over here. It's not an operation. It's an old man. These are Arabs. Don't worry, someone else will take care of them. Find a different tent. You know, you go to Israel. Go down to go down south. It's unbelievable. That's all they have. They have nothing else. No cars, no washing machines, no television. You'll see them. It's unbelievable. All right, that's what they have. So they're going to go to a different tent. They'll get cable there. They'll get, you know, all the wonderful 106 channels. They'll have, I don't know what you always hear on the radio, what's that called? I can't remember what it's called. All right, you get this one and that one, the Dish Network. It's great. You're going to come to Avraham Avinu. What's he going to give you? Won't even give you a radio. What's he going to give you? So once they come to Avraham Avinu, it's going to be a good meal, but he's an old man, so go someplace else. Avraham Avinu runs out and he greets them, he's Mechabed, and he puts them underneath this tremendous tree and he starts teaching them, he gives them all. So that's a big, big chesed story. Why? Because, I don't know, you have to go looking through the psukim until you start finding acts. I mean, she did chesed, she went with Nami, but it's not blown out of proportion. She went, she stayed with her mother-in-law, she helped her out with the dishes, she needed some food, she went to the grocery, she did some shopping for her, she came back, because she said, I have an interesting boy for you to meet, he's 80 years old, you're 40 at age, he's a little factor, but you know, maybe marry him, and you know, she goes with him, she gets married, and that's it, they live happily ever after. That's a nice, good story. Chazal is telling us what's so unique about Rus. You know what Chazal is telling us about Rus? Chazal are telling us about Rus that small actions count. Chesed, we sometimes think in our mind, chesed means we have to make a sheva brachas for somebody and serve all the delicacies that you could think of. What about helping out someone across the street? It's a small chesed, someone that's elderly, someone that's handicapped. So a little child, here you don't see it so much. In Eretz Yisrael, you always see it. It's one of the cutest things to see. The little kid that come over to you and they say, remember the beginning, they first came over to me, the kid was standing, must have been about 5 minutes. I didn't know what the kid was saying. I'm sure the kid was saying, kid, this dumb American, just get the words. I just got to get the other side of his feet. My parents told me I can't cross the street, right? So I'm sitting there, I didn't know what a kvish was in those days. They wanted a ramp, a keves, maybe wanted a sheep. I don't know what the guy wanted, a little kid. Shalavot the kvish, right? They'll finally figure it out. You know, you signal, you say, you get him across the street. Right? It's a small little act. That's what the Nabi Rus is teaching us. These small little actions, small actions of boyas, showing a concern for Rus, giving her a little food. From that small little action came out of David HaMelech. From Rus, helping out in the army, came out of David HaMelech. Small actions, very, very small. Sometimes it could be just, a Mashalach comes to a door, and we offer it besides a check. Today my wife came over to me, she said, we're missing 3 raincoats. If anyone over here knows where they are, please let us know. But people come to us, and it's raining outside, so we offer them raincoats. The problem is we have no more raincoats. We've got to buy some raincoats. We've got a shortage of raincoats. If anyone has extra raincoats, the brachas are missing. 3 of our kids and my wife is missing her raincoats. I don't know where they are. It's raining outside. So someone needs a raincoat. So you give him a raincoat. The thing is, you got to remember to get it back. All right? So, I don't know if that's chesed, or is that called tzedakah, or is that called batlanishkeit. I'm not sure which one it is. Right? But, you know, someone comes up and says, the door all wet. Let him stay inside for 2 minutes. If the rain comes down, give him a chocolate. It doesn't take that much to do. It's a small act. From that small act, that's what Rus is teaching us. Rus is teaching us. Because Baruch was making clothing other mechava, I would say, you know what Hashem did? If the Medrash wanted to tell us the chesed that he did, what we said at the beginning, Olam chesed, your body made a world. That's a chesed. He made lightning, he made thunder, he made rain, he made billions of fish, he's providing for the crocodiles, and he's providing for... That's chesed. What the Medrash says is that he made clothing for Adam. He made clothing for... Big deal. Not big deal. It's a nice thing. He took him to the tailor, and he got him a suit. The Medrash is telling us that small actions are big actions. Chesed, we sometimes think the only chesed that we can do is if we do it big, that's the way to do it. I know we're going to drop over, but I want to share with you an amazing story I heard on one of Raymond Bader. He was not I first thought it was a comedian or something like that, but he happens to be a Svarish, a businessman who gives a share in New York, and he gives a wonderful share. And he said this story on one of his tapes from Rabbi Levine. Rabbi Levine was the very famous tzaddik of Yerushalayim. There's a whole book. It's called The Tzaddik in Our Time, and then they wrote another book, and another, three books on him. Rabbi Levine happened to be a certain Jew. His name was Rabbi Yossel. I don't know, remember the last name, Rabbi Yossel. And Rabbi Yossel was the founding, one of the founding fathers of the Bikur Cholim Hospital. If you go to Eretz Yisrael and you go to the Bikur Cholim Hospital, his name is on the wall there. There's probably 50 Rabbi Yossel, so I know his last name, so that's going to help you. But Rabbi Yossel. And Rabbi Yossel collected for Bikur Cholim Hospital. He arranged literally to set up the hospital, the beds, the units. He interviewed many of the doctors. He was instrumental literally in building up the hospital. And he made it his business not only just to build a hospital, but once the hospital was functioning, he went from room to room in his, so to say, spare time. It's the people that have no time that always find the time. And he went to room visiting various cholim, followed up on certain cases. He was kulei chesed, Rabbi Yossel. He became old, like all of us do. I hate to break it to anybody over here, but you know, we do become old sometime in our lifetime. He became old. And when he reached the age of 75, he became ill. And he himself had to be placed inside the hospital, in the Bikur Cholim Hospital. I don't know exactly what happened, but he suddenly got a terrible illness, and he went from worse to worse. And he asked for, when he was still in the state of consciousness, he asked for Rabbi Levine to come to visit him. He was very close to Rabbi Levine. That's when we know the story from Rabbi Levine. He asked for Rabbi Levine to come. So Rabbi Levine was there, brought with him his tillin. Suddenly, he went into a state of unconsciousness. And everyone was panicking. Rabbi Levine was running, get this doctor, try this, try that. And Rabbi Levine was told he has to leave the room. And it didn't look too good. 4 hours they were working on this, Rabbi Yossel. And finally, the doctor came out. Jesus. How is he? How's he doing? How's Rabbi Yossel? Says, you're not going to believe us. Come back. We thought we lost him. We brought him back. Wow, we fantastic. When can I see him? The doctor says, you know what? You can see him right now. He's doing so well. You can see him. We he had a very strange recovery. We didn't want a lot of people to come in right away, but for the last about 45 minutes, he's been sitting up already. He's talking. You could go in. I was inside the room. He's also sitting on the bed there, smiling. And he tells her, Barry, I'm so happy that you're here. So glad that you waited. Because I have to share with you a story. What happened? When I went through a state of unconsciousness, they lost me. I saw myself. I was out of this room. I was out of here. I came upstairs to Bez Neshamah. Now, we're living right now in times of Dybbuk stories. I don't know, yet Dybbuk, no Dybbuk, but this Rabbi Aryeh Levin says over the story to me, that's Emes Lamita. Rabbi Aryeh Levin said, Rabbi Yossel told him, came upstairs to Bez Neshamah, and over there, he saw many of the Chachmei Hador. The Gedolei Hador, which is brought down in Sforum, that those are the first trial that we go through, the Gedolim are the ones that question us. Of our generation, not 5,500 years ago. Of our generation, those Gedolim, they're the ones that start with the questions. And they asked, the first question they asked him, did he observe Torah Mitzvahs? And I answered yes. And suddenly, there were flocks of beautiful, large, thousands upon thousands of malachim. Each of the malachim that I had created through my actions came by to stand by and testify of the mitzvahs that I did. And they asked me, did you do avirus? And I raised my head in shame. And my head up, I saw thousands upon thousands of big angels, big black angels. And I was scared out of my mind. I was just too embarrassed, too frightened. They started to din. They started prosecuting angels, started to say this, and the defense started to say like that, back, forth, back, forth. They started to discuss what they're going to do. Suddenly, a person who was in the crowd, I don't know where he was, but he came in. He came into the trial, and he said, let Rabbi Yossel, leave him alone. And they said, who are you? You didn't knock, you know, you didn't ring the bell, didn't speak to the secretary at the front door. How do you, who are you? I was one of the founding fathers of the Bikur Cholim Hospital. And I know that this man, his whole life was devoted and dedicated to caring for others. And he made a tremendous Kiddush Hashem on Jew and non-Jew alike that were allowed inside Bikur Cholim Hospital, religious and irreligious. Heard that? Everything in Shemayim is Emes, you know, you can't fake. So he can't speak either in a fake. It was Emes. They deliberated some longer, some more, and they decided they were going to give me a second chance to come back and to fix up a virus that I did. And that's what they told me. You're free to go back down to the Aretz. I do tshuva on your virus. Because it didn't look too good, at least right at that state. And all of a sudden, they all disappeared. And I was left up over there in heaven, or whatever it was, whatever I was. And I saw in front of me, he says, mountains, streams, deserts. He saw a whole world. He didn't know where to go. He didn't know where to go. And I'm wandering, I want to get back down to Earth. But you know, it's not like, you know, you press the third floor and you come back down. He just didn't know how to get back down to Earth. And I was panicking. And all of a sudden, an image of a person, a big, burly, unkempt, long-haired fella, comes over to me. He says, is your name Yosef? Well, before he was Rabbi Yossel, he happened to be Yosef. He says, yeah, that's me. I once lived in Lita. He says, yeah, I once lived there. Little boy, your father's name is Nachman. Yeah, that's me. He says, do you remember who I am? Why do you remember once? Let me tell you a little story about, I know we got to end, but let me just tell you a little story of who I am. The minhag used to be in your shul, at the end of davening, all the poor people would sit in the back row. If you needed a place for Shabbos, so you would ask, you'd see the aniyim, the poor people, and you would ask them, come to me, eat a meal, come to me, etc. Well, I was sitting in the back row, one year, one day, one Shabbos. And I looked almost the way I look right now. I was 30, I won't care. Nobody wanted to invite me over. Who's going to invite over that type of a beggar? So, people walked by me. No one invited me. And your father also walked by, looked me up, had him down. Mm-mm. Can't have him in my house. I was left. Everybody left the shul. You left, your father left, everybody left. I was the only one left in the shul. And I found out something that you did. You came home, you told your father something. You told your father, you know, he was that beggar that was sitting inside the shul, had no place to eat, no place to go. Daddy, I saw you looked him over, and I know that you were uncomfortable to take him. But he has no place to go. Can we have him in our house? And your father really didn't want to. And then you said to your father, Pa, Daddy, Abba, Tati, if he doesn't come to our house to eat, I am not going to eat. I won't start to eat if that person there in shul doesn't have a place to eat. Back with your father and yourself, and you brought me to your house, and I had that Shabbos meal. I hand that to him. Now I'm going to take your hand. As it was said, he took me down through Shemayim, brought me right back to the hospital bed, and that's when I woke up. What I took from that story was, Ad Kan Stabeda's story. He was a man that did so much chesed in the hospital. That got him free. That was the big chesed. Look at the small chesed. Not going to eat. One meal I sacrificed. He's a little boy. I'm not going to eat. That's what got him back down here. That's what gave him really his second chance. What gave him his second chance was the small chesed. And that's something that perhaps, after Shavuos, something for us to take it to our lives, and we're all involved with chesedim. But try to take on sometimes the small little chesed. Writing a thank you note. Making a phone call to someone who does carpool and thinking that's a small act, so small. But sometimes these small acts, as the Sefer, the Snachlis Yosef, he says, B'chol ma'isa katan shal gemilas chasadim. In every single action of gemilas chasadim, he says, yeshaychis, there is a connection. The binyan beis hamikdash, the yetziras melech hamashiach. Every small action that we do has a connection. That's the message of Rus. Has a connection to eventually the creation, the birth of melech hamashiach, and the building of the beis hamikdash. So that's perhaps a message that we could take from Rus. We want Mashiach to come. We're pushing it. We got to get to it. The way to get to it is by doing acts of chesed. And the acts of chesed not necessarily have to be on the big acts. They could be sometimes the smallest deeds that Rus did, and what Boaz did. Look what came out from it. Came out of David, came out of Melech HaMashiach.